Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
D-Ream are a Northern Irish pop and dance group. They achieved a UK number one hit with Things Can Only Get Better in 1994. Eight further top 40 hits followed, including You Are the Best Thing, Take Me Away, and Shoot Me With Your Love. Their two 1990s studio albums both reached the UK top five. The duo stopped performing and creating music in 1997 and reunited in 2008. Since then, the duo have been coming together every few years, defining and refining their sound, most recently on the 2021 album Open Hearts, Open Minds. In 2025, they released their fifth studio album and the title single, Do It Anyway. They also have a new label deal with Chrysalis. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Peter Cunner and Elle McKenzie from D-Ream.
Where are you in the world and how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And I am in London at the moment.
And Pete?
Hi, Barrett. I'm in Donegal in Northwest Ireland.
How did the name, Pete, you first, how did the main D-Ream come to light with and the spellings and all that kind of stuff?
Alan and I have different recollections of this, but we had a gig and we had to get a name for the gig. And I thought we were sitting there talking about the Dream Boys. Who were a strip act. And I thought that would be a perfect Mickey take, as it were, for us. And I think Alan remembers it differently. Alan?
I do. I remember us desperate for a name because we had to do a gig and coming out. And I remember the Dream Academy, a band from the 80s, who had sang a song called Life in a Northern Town, which is very floaty and dreamy. And I thought that we sort of went there, so oh, that's really floaty. And then we thought, oh, Dream, there's bound to be a band called Dream, which may well have been. So we'll put a hyphen in our case, a colon between the D and the R. So like D-Note, M-People, there was The Influence. There's lots of bands. Yeah, D-Light. Yeah, so we thought we'd be clever. Turned out we weren't so clever in the end.
Why did you say that?
Fact that. It massively backfired on us. In HTML, when Tim Berners-Lee was designing the internet, the colon is a character reserved for the address bar. So it's an illegal character for anything else. So when you try and find us, we've just disappeared on the internet.
Alan, you first. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you think, okay, I want to be in this music world? How did that journey progress? How did you join the band? And let's unpack your journey.
Yeah, well, there was no sort of realization from a young age, to be honest. I was, I worked in a bank and stuff, and I love music. I love listening to music. You know, my dad bought records and had records in the house. And I started DJing in the 80s when I moved. I was in Scotland, then I moved down to England. And I was a DJ and then started making music. Not making music, sort of playing records, I should say. I did a few things. And then subsequently, that's where I was always going. And then I was DJing in a club I used to run in London, Wardour Street, The Brain. And young Pedro, well, not so, well, he's young then, not so young now, but Pedro came in and accosted me and said, I have some tunes and I wouldn't mind making them sound, well, get them more sound like what you're playing on that sort of vibe. I mean, would you come around my house? And at first I thought he's propositioning me. But then I realized he wasn't. So I demanded Jammy Dodgers, which is a biscuit we used to eat and people eat around here. So I demanded Jammy Dodgers in the house and went round there to see what he had in his closet.
Pete, your story?
I had music in the blood, really, since I can remember. And there was a great article recently I saw where Bruno Mars recanted his childhood, where he took the candlesticks and he put them on the fender of his mum and dad's fireplace and started behaving like, I can't remember who his favorite artist was. But that was shocking because to me, I did that in 1968, trying to pretend to be Elvis. So it must be something that kids do when they're emulating what they see on the telly box. I was doing that since I can remember, before I could actually play, but I could sing all right when I was little. And then, yeah, I started playing guitar at 10, and I was in my first band when I was 12, 13. And yeah, it just snowballed from there. This was a little indie band. We signed to Mother Records, U2's label. They brought us to London. That didn't work out, but I found myself staying in London when the others went home. And within a few years, I was getting into the house music scene in London. And that's when I, you know, bumped into Al. Of all the gin joints, you know. It was incredible to me because up until that point, all the bands I'd been in, everyone was making music with a view to seeing what the labels thought. Whereas when we did what we did, it was just me and Al making this sound, and it was us and the audience and word of mouth through that scene. And that's what was different. Yeah, because the sensation was just happening in real time in front of our eyes. We could sell records directly to the house music fans at that time.
You guys have been in the industry for a number of years, a couple of decades. Alan, what motivates you to keep creating, keep performing, and keep getting on stage?
I think once you start doing it, it's a sort of all you really know. I mean, obviously, you could go and get another job, but it's a lot easier job to do than getting up in the morning and working on a building site or going into an office. At least, you know, say it's easier. It feels easier anyway. I'm not necessarily sure it is, because at least you get paid regularly when you work in those jobs. Yeah. You make music, so you can't really stop. We've been doing it so long now that it'd be a really strange thing just to suddenly say, right, I'm not going to make another record or make another tune. It's just something you do. I mean, obviously, it's nice if people like it and buy it and listen to it, and it helps you keep on doing it. But you know, it's getting harder and harder as years go by for that to happen. Unfortunately, it's there. But we, you know, we like doing our gigs. We have fun, and we, you know, as long as the crowd like it, it's great.
Eat.
It's just what we do, isn't it? And I think the thing is, I expect if you worked out how many hours we put in for the 1 hour that we do on stage, that it's nothing like even minimum wage. But that's how stupid we are, because we still love what we do to the point where we sort of get off on it. So that's why we're still up there jumping around when most people would be putting on their slippers and get their smoking jacket out, you know.
Alan, tell us about the latest project, the latest album. What was motivation and inspiration behind it?
Yeah, I mean, the latest album's called Do It Anyway. It came out a couple of months ago. We'd done an album a few years ago, Open Hearts, Open Minds, and I suppose we thought we might not do anything else, but then we went into overdrive after that, and we just started doing more and more music, and the more we did, to the point, I think at one stage we were foolishly thinking, oh, we could release a triple album, thinking it was going to be a concept album, or a white album, or Sergeant Pepper's, whatever. Yeah. It's a double vinyl album now, so we did get rid of some of the songs. But we just went, as people before, we just like working, and we just got in, and we're producing new stuff, and it was like quite exciting. And once you do that, you think, well, we've got to get it out. Well, I say fortunate enough to have a label, Christmas Records, sort of take it on and put it out for us. We did the last one ourselves, so it was nice to have someone put it out. That's what we do. We make music, and I think, again, we've excelled ourselves once more. I think, obviously, and if we didn't think that, we'd be really silly, because if you'd never come on the show and say, I think this is probably our worst album to date. That wouldn't be very... But I do genuinely think it's, you know, it's as good as anything we've done. I thought the last album was our best, and now I think we're equaling that. So as we get older, I think we're improving with age, musically anyway.
Pete, anything to add?
No, I mean, Alan's pretty much nailed it there. Yeah, it's great that at this stage, you know, when I'm 59 now, that Chrysalis were at all interested in working with us. And you know, we're now looking towards the second single and seeing if we can get that out. And just, it's about getting the attention. For us anyway, in England, if we could get on Radio 2, then it sort of seems to be real to people then. Because at the minute, we've had a lot of support from regional radio, and we've done a fair bit of press and radio, regional radio, but to date that has eluded us. So yeah, we're trying to work towards that goal of getting it on the radio and getting people to know that we're, you know, doing what we do again, but loving what we do again. Hopefully those songs will go in and they'll feel what we're feeling. That's the whole point, isn't it? As an artist, you hope to transmit that feeling and see if people feel it.
you referenced, Alan, about comparing. Was there ever a situation, especially in the beginning, especially when you guys had the number one songs, number one hits, that it was a thing of whether it was pressure from the label or pressure in your guys' mind, okay, we need to recreate the success or previous success that we had. And when it didn't do that, there was a feeling of failure.
The thing is, labels will always try and pressure you. As an artist, you want to recreate the euphoria and the hype, but you wouldn't necessarily want to make the same type of music. And I think some people like to do that, music by numbers, as it were. They make tunes to sound like, you know, their sound sort of thing. And that's not really us, I don't think. We just try and make music that we like, and we hope, obviously, we'd love people to get into it like they did in the first, you know, that first time around, because that's great. It's great because people are enjoying it. But I think if Pete could write Things Went Better Part 2, he would. You just don't pull him off a hanger. It's not, I don't think that's how it works, you know. And you know, there's plenty of bands out there, you hear one song and you hear another one, you think, that sounds exactly the same. It's that one or near enough, you know. There's a lot of that. To me, that's not really creativity. For me personally, it's just, you know, some people like that. Well, I mean, that's, I suppose, but...
If I was writing like that, then I wouldn't have written Best Thing, and we wouldn't have Things Could Get Better, and then we wouldn't have, you know, All Things to One Man. We wouldn't have Do It Anyway. The whole point as an artist is to challenge yourself to go one stage better, to have a different insight and to be able to sort of express that. You know, if you do listen to Max Martin and you listen to Hit Me Baby One More Time, and then you listen to Whoops, I Did It Again, he's literally used the same gems and keys and everything, and that's by numbers. And fair play to him, because that is also, I think that's equally valid, but we just didn't do that. We built all the drums from scratch. Every time we did a new record, it was all bespoke stuff. It's just, you know, just built up naturally around the song. So we're still working like that. Yeah, there's very little that's by numbers. In fact, nothing's by numbers. We kind of want to surprise ourselves as well as the fans, and we've moved it on because, yes, it's got house in its blood, in its spirit, but, you know, you wouldn't call it a house record. It's not banging out the tunes at 180 BPM or whatever it is, the latest beat. It's got a gentleness to it. It's got flow. It's got lyrics and melodies and all the stuff that we enjoy listening to that turn us on, you know, musically. So that's what we're presenting each time we make a new record.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, it's an energy exchange to say thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you do. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklets, this listening to song one to whatever number. I'm sure you may or may not be aware there's a massive uptick of physical around the world. A couple of years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Last year, also in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And based on these exchanges, they monitor it for some other tax purposes. There needs to be a high number of exchange of a product in order for it to be in this basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. And the research is showing that it's the teenagers, the younger kids that are diving into this world, not necessarily the older, in inverted commas, nostalgic people. Then we have Spotify and these streaming platforms. Pete, you first, what are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I'm really quite far out of the music industry, to be honest, because when I suggested to the label that we do a music video for Do It Anyway, we were kind of teased along for a bit before we got word that it wasn't going to happen. And I was going, well, why would we do that? I mean, you need to have a video so that the song is real. And they said, no one watches them, Pete. You know, you've got very few views on YouTube or wherever it was. So what would be the point of that? And then we sort of discovered TikTok, and that's all 20 seconds. You've got 20 seconds of people's attention, right? So you do these kind of little short pieces to camera, which is what I was doing the whole time during the promotional campaign. So for me, it's become quite disfigured. So I don't know. I have a problem with Spotify, obviously, but I'm part of a movement here. You know, we've got the label, we've got my band, Alan, my partner, and... You know, I have to go with the wishes of everybody, but there's all sorts of lovely little bespoke things coming up that are almost by artists for artists. And I think that that's more the way we should be moving, where the contact between the fans and the bands is removed by the gatekeepers. And I would love to see that because ultimately it's a fan-based experience and it's our experience as well. You know, why should we have middlemen? I don't know. Maybe that's why we're missing the point here. That's where the hype lies. I don't know. Kind of, we're going through a lot of changes, you know, and people have devalued music because they have so much easy access to it. I know that they just pulled off something like 80 million songs off Spotify that's basically been AI generated just a few days ago. So the whole thing's, I think, in a state of flux.
Alan, anything to add?
It's so difficult now selling. I mean, and you're saying about physical product, but it's difficult selling it unless you've got, you know, you can get to your marketplace and really hit them. If people don't know it's out there, they're not going to buy it. You know, that that's just basic economics, ultimately. And it's that thing, you know, some of the bigger labels and these bigger artists, they can turn around, they can hype the hell out of it, and it'll sell. But artists like ourselves, who are maybe down the chain somewhat from your Ed Sheerans and whatnot, labels aren't going to put that money in. So getting people to know the stuff's out there is difficult. Sales are there, streams are there, but I mean, everyone knows the stream, the royalties on streams are roughly, everyone's got a rough idea. We all know where they are with that. And again, that some of theirs are inflated with whatever they're doing. If you see these things, the plays are being generated with more plays to get the more hype sort of thing, that whole thing. I mean, we don't do any of that at all. Maybe we should think about doing some of that to get our plays up. I don't know. No, we wouldn't. That was obviously a bit tongue-in-cheek there. So it's difficult. So sales are, yeah, worldwide sales are up from before, but they did take a massive drop. But I mean, I have a label, I sell a tidy number of, you know, but then it's a dance label and we hit a certain market and they sell. In the market we're in, as I say, Doreen, it's a massive market, huge, huge market, huge competition, you know, I mean, getting people to find out, you know, it's, I mean, I don't know what hype was done by us, you know, on this one. I'm like, you know, it certainly wasn't any posters or anything like that, so people would see it. You literally are trying to hit social media, and I think it's hard work. It's very hard work, but you know, again, as you said, around, we keep doing it. We believe in our own music, absolutely.
You pass your smell.
Of course, absolutely.
Alan, what do you enjoy about performing live?
I like when the crowd's there; they're enjoying it, and everyone in the band's enjoying it. It's great. You know, you can have a smaller crowd that are into it than a bigger crowd that are not. If you know what I mean? And that's the smaller crowd's going to win every time because they're really in it, the ones that if they're bang into it. I think we do a lot of festivals, and festivals, we've done quite well on them, to be fair, but festivals, I always say this, there's a lot of people in the crowd, and they're not all there to see you. They're, you know, sometimes to see the main act or whatever, it depends. A lot of them might, you know, necessarily like some of the bands on, so it's winning them over, and if you can get a crowd and get them really going for it, then it's a great thing. I think it's a really good vibe.
Pete?
The joy of live is, well... It's, you know, someone said to me the other day, you know, you know, you get to do this and, you know, I was whinging about, I don't know, not the sandwiches, but I was whinging about the guitar not working when I needed it to. And, you know, because we're on the festival circuit, we're at the hands of multiple different crews all the time. So the changeovers can be quite hairy. So I could park that bit and the flying, but someone just gave me a slap on the head the other day and says, you know, the rest of us are going to be forgotten long after your name's going to carry on and you're doing what you do and you bring joy to people. And I keep forgetting that, but I don't want to take it for granted at all. I love what we do when we do it well. We had a gig there on Friday night, was it, Al? Yeah, we did this show and the sound was great and everyone could hear each other on stage. And we got into this sort of thing on stage where we were having a laugh and then that energy went out into the crowd. And it kind of felt like, you know, just people, we're having a great time. We're just having a great time. So you come away from that, you're really kind of, you're buzzing, you know.
Pete, what's coming up over the next period of time?
I'm actually going away to Thailand this Christmas and I'm going to do a bit of diving. And I'm also working on an autobiography. I know Alan's got his Field of Dreams, but we're now talking again about some, all the dates, lining them up for next year. And we're speaking to the label about what the next single is, the follow-up. So it's just the basics, really, trying to get the message out there. People still don't know that Doreen's back together again. And we've been, last 15 years, we've been whipping and hollering and jumping around and, hey, over here, look over here, hey. And hopefully maybe the penny will drop. Maybe we'll get some support at Radio 2. That's what we could really do with. So anyone that knows anyone at Radio 2, please hassle them. And that's it. We're just going to keep doing what we do.
Alan, for you, what's coming up? Anything to add?
Well, what Pete just said there, I mean, we're getting the gigs lined up for next year. We want to make sure people know, because this album, it's out now, but, it's got a long shelf life. And the last album as well, we want everyone to be listening to this music we've been doing over the last, well, all of it, but certainly the last sort of three albums we've done. What people know about these is not just about things going better, it's not just about you're the best singer. No, there's a lot more tunes, and really, well, in our opinion, really good tunes. So that's that. Yeah, I have my own little label. We just knock things out there and I do a bit of DJing. We're going to hopefully do quite a lot of gigs next year. And, we've got a few years left in us yet, just about.
Left on the clock.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure I fancy being there when I'm 70 odd, but,
I don't know. I'm nearly 60 and I'm still jumping around.
I think we've got a few years in us. I think, mid-60s, I think we can be there still, jumping around a wee bit.
For me, age is just a number. And a lot of people attached themselves to a number that does not exist.
Yes.
And they're like, I'm this age, which society means that this is equated to that, which means I can't do this. And it gets on my nerves when anyone ever says to me, they can't do such and such because they're now this old. I say, well, you're as old as you want to be. So shush.
We are acting like teenagers, to be sure.
My gran was born in 1896, my grandmother. And when she got to her late 50s, the age I am now, she got into her rocking chair and she stayed there. And last weekend, if you've seen this idiot, I was jumping around like I was in my mid-20s, and the next day I paid for it.
It's also the thing is that the older generations, they were more stuck in those societal directions.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas this, we are more like, no, sod it.
Yeah. No, 60's the new 20, haven't you heard?
Exactly. I love this game. Alan, you first. I know if I had to ask you this question tomorrow, the next day, or the next day, I know your guys, both of you will have different answers every time. I understand that and I recognize that. Like I said, I'm not saying favorite, I'm saying top of mind. Alan, if you had to push play to five other artists once you finish this conversation, who would those artists be?
Prince would be number one, definitely. Radiohead, The Cure, Stevie Wonder, and probably Joni Mitchell.
Nice mix. Pete, who's yours?
That's amazing. I was thinking today about the Psychedelic Furs and how much I haven't listened enough to them. Probably the Waterboys, obviously Prince. I'm getting back into the Police again. I've been learning some of those riffs. And Simon and Garfunkel, who just stuff I'd just forgotten that are great to play on the guitar.
So Pete, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
Joy to the world. May you find peace and get busy. Click on play for us and move around your room. Send us one of your TikTok videos dancing to our tune. That's what I'd like to see.
Alan, anything to add?
I like that sentiment. Look, as Pete says, love each other. Stop all this hate that's going on. And go on and find our music and have a listen to it. It's damn good.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.